morning, James, and welcome to the Five Ways to Wellbeing podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you in for a conversation. I'm hoping it's probably going to be a little bit more appropriate than our last time we got together for a podcast.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that was probably back in GCSEs, wasn't it? And that didn't go awfully well.
I think we had a podcast when we were in GCSEs.
Yeah.
And then we did a speech at the sixth form leavers dinner.
Didn't your English literature teacher deem that one of the worst speeches she's ever heard?
It was.
Yeah.
And probably just on the literary content.
Yeah. Not quite appropriate for LinkedIn, I don't think.
No, not quite. But, you know, you've always been someone I've talked to about mental health. We've had a lot of shared experiences by virtue of being friends for over 20 years. So it's great to have you here today to talk about it together.
No, thanks for having me. I think it's, you know, it's been a crucial part in both of our lives. But I think we'll go through it today, but it's guided pretty much every stage of my life and will continue to do so, I think. So it's actually just a joy and a pleasure to be able to take some time to sit down and talk about it. So I'm glad I'm here.
Why is talking important? You know, you're someone who I know vocalizes what's going on in their head when they're struggling, and I think that's really admirable. But why is that important?
I think it's sort of a period of rationalization as well. I think it does make it easier. There's no dictated way why for me it makes it easier than somebody else, and I think other people as well don't necessarily, you know, have the same process as me. For me, a problem shared is a problem halved. So being able to talk to somebody else and also, you know, other people's viewpoints, just because it's your mental health struggle doesn't necessarily mean that it's just yours, you know. Sometimes you value people's opinions, and sometimes those opinions also can change the way you think about things as well. So since a really young age, I've been talking to people about mental health, both medical professionals and friends and family. And for me, it's just my way of processing things. And I think my process-driven brain as well also needs me to unpick things. It needs me to not leave grey areas and no stone left unturned kind of thing.
So you find you can get yourself a little bit tangled up when you're trying to conquer things on your own?
I think so. My whole life has been about collaboration and you know, talking to other people. And the reason I'm in the position that I'm in is because of talking to people and being personable. So I think I watched a podcast the other day, and it was about being vulnerable around people, especially in leadership roles. And I think vulnerability is a really important thing, because people don't then expect the world of you. And then your expectations in turn aren't constantly being pushed in your head and you know, the snowball effect.
And do you find that you create a more trusted environment by showing your vulnerability? Are people able to trust you more?
I think so. And that is really recent as well, to be honest. That's kind of moving into managerial roles. And that vulnerability helps all of us. I think it helps all of us because firstly, it shows you're human, and it enables people to and allows people to open up back to you as well. But it also, I just think it instantly puts everybody in a more comfortable space. For me, workplaces that are more open and more porous and more less individualistic have always been more successful in my career.
And do you think that vulnerability is a trait as a salesperson that can lead to great success?
100%. All of our customer interactions, I think as soon as you start turning off the this is a customer face, and I say this to all of my sales staff as well, because especially kind of younger individuals, and I don't want to stereotype younger individuals, but we all come in and we fear this customer. This customer is like an illustrious person that we're going after and we're trying to target. And all the words we use in sales are really strange as well. It is like targeting someone. But realistically, you're offering a consultancy, you're offering a service that they need anyway. So being friendly, learning about their lives, learning about the way they work is actually not just good for sales, but it's hugely socially, it just makes you more comfortable. And I think it's a point we're going to talk about as well on the Connect side of things. It's so much easier to deliver good news, bad news, to ask for things, to talk to customers when you're open and you're vulnerable. And I think vulnerable as well, especially over the last couple of years, has become less of a taboo word. before, when you were vulnerable, you were seen as small and little, and you couldn't make an impact. But actually, some of the people I've worked with, and the most powerful people and my mentors, are all extremely vulnerable with me, and I'll know intricate details about how they're feeling and what makes them tick.
Mm. I like what you said about the language that we use in the sales profession, because I was just thinking of prospecting while you were talking, and that I think, anyway, the etymology of that word is when you go and mine a rock.
Yeah.
And therefore it's been picked up by the sales profession, probably perhaps by someone one day coined the phrase, because they said, oh, if you hit some coal, you'll find some diamonds in the rough, or something like that. And it's not, it's pretty self-serving as a word, prospecting, isn't it? It's like you're going to go away and chip away at something until you get what you want.
Yeah, and I think if we link it back to mental health as well, and sales mental health, it's so, the jobs we do sometimes are extremely difficult. When you look at new business targeting and stuff as well, they can be if you don't frame them in the right way. So if you're constantly framing your sort of new business goals and targets and things like that in a way that is prospecting, that is targeting, that is pulling from a database and not humanizing any of it, you just lose sight of why you're doing it in the first place. Mm. And you lose sight of the product as well, because you're piling so much emphasis on quantity. You don't sort of focus on that quality as well. And that just leads to a cycle from a mental perspective that starts to go down and down and down and down. And I work with salespeople all the time that we both sit and we just say, this has been a really bad week. And it's actually, why has this been a bad week? Yeah, we didn't get any responses, but do we still believe in the product? Yes. Do we still believe in what we're doing? Yes. Otherwise, we both wouldn't be sat here. And I think it's important at every stage in your career to check that you're still happy with what you're doing and you're still able to follow these steps. Because I think when you lose the love of the job, you lose the love of the product, you lose all of this as well, and you lose the well-being side. Like, this conversation is lovely to have, but it's only here because we both love our jobs and we love our careers and where they're going. So it's important to focus on it all holistically, I think.
Mm. So you talked about, you know, you're transitioning into you have transitioned into a leadership role in sales, and you recognise the importance of vulnerability, and see that there is a benefit to be had in that your colleagues can connect to you a little bit easier,
yeah,
because they don't see you up in an ivory tower. They see you as the same person they are. That's one of the five ways of well-being, is to connect to other individuals.
Yeah.
And it's suggested quite simply that our mental well-being will be improved. You mentioned, you know, problem shared is a problem halved. It's a bit like that. It's a how are you connecting with either colleagues or friends?
Yeah.
And how that can promote positive mental well-being. How do you exhibit that as a sales leader?
I think it kind of comes inherently to me anyway as my personal behavior, and that's not a fantastic way of going, I follow these steps every day. I think I unintentionally follow steps every day, which is, when I first took on the role, I made sure that we had one-to-ones, but we had opportunities to talk about things away from work. So the one thing that I picked up from managers in the past is, a professional relationship is fantastic, but when you don't have the opportunity to tell people why you're not doing so well or why you're not succeeding, and I think that's a real opportunity missed. So every single day I sit on the same bank of desks as all of my colleagues. And again, I don't call them my team. I don't call them my staff. They're not that. They're my colleagues. And I do, we all have the same goal. The only thing is I do their one-to-ones and I do end of year appraisals, which are needed for a business. For me, that's a business process. The rest of it is just how we come together as a team and how I support them. So every single day we'll be having conversations, and a lot of the conversations aren't built around, James, what do we do on this? It's, James, this is a problem. That's a fantastic problem. Let's build a solution together so we all feel connected and involved in the solution. Because if it fails, it's not one person's responsibility. It's all of ours. It's a shared problem. That has just bred this culture of constant sharing. So we see problems now a lot earlier than we did previously. Previously, we were in crisis firefighter mode right at the end of a problem because we didn't connect with each other initially. Mm-hmm. So now we'll have tiny problems on a daily basis that we'll constantly be sharing. And that is my mentality throughout the whole team is you'll never be held responsible for putting up your hand. You'll never be held responsible if you say that you're not doing so good or you need some support. That's exactly why we're here. You'll be held responsible if we haven't communicated, we haven't connected, and further down the line we have more issues. So for me, it's just a daily thing. It's every single day making sure that we're taking time for each other, whether that's 5 minutes coffee, whether that's somebody needs a half an hour walk around the block just to talk things through. And no pressure, no real pressure. We all have, as sales directors or sales leaders, we all have pressure and we know the financial pressure that is constantly in the background, but it's our responsibility to be able to park that and come up with strategies that support everybody. It's not, you know, it's not Leanne's fault that there's £1,000 down out of the budget or whatever. It's how do we create a strategic solution that actually supports everybody socially and professionally? And I think that's really important. I think a lot of organizations ignore the social side of things, but it's, you know, it's a huge part of our lives and it can have a massive negative impact on us if we don't consider it every day.
Mm. And what about you personally? Let's say you've had a very stressful week. You haven't been looking after your mental health as well as you could have. Mm. Let's say it's a Friday afternoon, because that does happen in sales. You get such busy weeks where you haven't had a chance to look after yourself. If we talk about the times when you have gone and connected with friends or family outside of work at a weekend, could you describe that? How do you go about doing that?
I like keeping everything scheduled, and so I make sure that I'm scheduled at least 4 to 6 weeks in advance on the weekends. So, mm-hmm. And that is not scheduled. It's just that I know I'm seeing someone, or I know I've got an opportunity to just offload and be away from work as well. So, I'll have all sorts. I love driving. I love going to see people. I love walks. I love dogs. I like families and like seeing all of my friends having families and things like that. So, I'm really, really active as a person, not so much during the week because of the pressures of work, but I make sure at weekends I'm just spending quality time. So the phone goes down. If I'm seeing people, I'm making sure that it's a constant connection with them. And it varies because I know so many people that like the opposite, that like to close themselves off for a weekend, lock all the doors and just watch Netflix. And I think it's really important to have a balance as well. Over the past year, more than ever, I've realized that everything is in a really fine balance. And if you have one weekend where you binge or you kind of go off the rails and you eat too much or you drink too much or whatever, it can disturb everything. So I try and keep everything in moderation now. It might not be the most fun on a sort of Friday or Saturday night, but it's, I think, as you start to realize what's important, and my Monday to Friday is really important to me, but also spending time, quality time with people at the weekends is really important. So, I mean, we do the same thing. We go for walks or we go for hikes, or I think our lives have just changed and they evolve constantly. And I'm sure in 10 years, 20 years time, I want to go bird watching. But right now I think it's family for me. It's family and friends and being around the people I love. And it's probably a core group of 6 or 7 people.
Well, I'm ready to introduce you to the ornithology community whenever you're ready.
Thanks very much. I've got the shoulder patches, so I'm almost there. I just need
you've got the shoulder patches. I've got that the green thing that I wear all the time.
What, the anorak?
Not the anorak, you know, the sort of gilet, the farmer's gilet.
The gilet.
I just need a flat cap and a pair of binoculars. I know you go to the gym quite a lot, James, and you know, we had our good friend Eddie on the podcast a couple of months ago, and he talked about he does CrossFit,
yeah.
And he talked about the benefit that has to his mental well-being. I know you're not quite a CrossFitter,
not yet,
but you might be soon, and you can have a chat to him about that later. But you go to the gym a lot. I know you're into your weightlifting.
Yeah,
what does that do for you? You know, what difference does it make?
I mean, exercise and being active generally is just so measurable. You know, a lot of the stuff in our lives is just up in the air, and it could happen tomorrow, it could happen in 6 months. Whereas you go to the gym and you have a program and you have something to track, and it's so measurable. It sounds really stupid from the outside, because for years I was not doing the same thing. I'd go to the gym for like 2 weeks. I wouldn't see any progress and I'd give up. This year has completely changed. I've had about half a year of just eating well and keeping that traceability up. And it's incredible what it does for your mental health. You switch from a perspective of, oh, I've got to go and do this too. Oh, I can't wait to just get out of the office and go. And it's that traceability and that measurability, if that was even a word, to, you always achieve something. You're achieving something. And in a sales brain, that is really, really good. Because a lot of the time you can have weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks when you don't necessarily achieve what you set out to do. But in the gym, it's so much easier to do. So yeah, for me, it's crucial. Every other day I'll have measurable goals and I'll be what we do, progressive overloading, which is just basically getting stronger and stronger and being able to see in metrics, you getting stronger over the weeks. And it just impacts the whole of your life, everything. You're more active, you're more social. As soon as you finish a workout, you want to talk to people, your brain is engaged. And also then you also build a community outside of work. So you're building a community in the gym, an active community that is hugely supportive as well. There's a lot of social media gym bodies out there, but you tend to just ignore all of those. So yeah, being active is really important. It wasn't traditionally, but I think if you can structure it in the right way and you can get into it and kind of treat it like a bit like a job, but something you really enjoy, then it really, really is useful. And from a mental perspective, it just improves everything outside of your day-to-day.
Mm. Yeah, the greatest mental health benefits I've had from any form of exercise have been when it's became consistent.
Yeah.
And it's part of regular life rather than a bit like how you were describing at the beginning when you're talking about sales goals as a team, where you get some organisations that push you towards just purely driven on numbers.
Yeah.
I haven't had any success with in being active when it's been purely about numbers for my mental health.
Yeah.
Whereas at the moment I'm going regularly 3 times a week, not trying to change the world overnight, and I'm feeling better about it.
And I think that's really important. It's the same in anything in life, is determining the goals initially. If your goal is you want a six pack, then that's also fine, but admit that to yourself and don't starve yourself and make yourself feel terrible because of that. If your goal equally, like us, is to just balance everything and have that balance. And selfishly, it does really improve my work because I can see when I'm not active that everything else tanks too. So I think, setting those goals is really, really important. But being strict on yourself and acknowledging the fact that you might have a donut after you go or whatever, everything is within moderation, and just relax is the main thing. Relax on it all. Relax on work. Relax on exercise, and don't be so militant with yourself on everything.
Mm.
And I think that's something we've both struggled with over the past. Is if I'm going to do something, I have to do it to 1,000%. I can't just do that little bit there and do that little bit there. But life requires that, I think.
Mm. I've never got moderation. but I think that's mainly been because for a lot of times in my life I've not been in a spiritually well condition, and therefore I've tried to seek a solution in something external, whether that's drugs or alcohol, or whether that's food. That's been my experience, where I've in the past I've gone to those things and tried to get better by doing it. But actually, moderation is perhaps reflective of a more humble mindset. You're like, I'm not going to get that six pack. I probably never will. But if I go to the gym 3 days a week, don't try and change the world overnight, then do you know what? I'm going to feel in a really good spiritual condition.
Yeah. And I think, don't want to deduce it to age again, but it does come down to age. I mean, we're 28, but it's... I feel the person that I was at 21 is a completely different person, both in sales and in work and also externally as well. I'm a completely different person and I'm a lot more I kind of look on my experiences a lot differently. And when we were 21, we were aspiring to $100,000 a year jobs, and because we didn't know what that meant. We didn't know what those people had to work to get that. So I think as your perspective on the world changes, this moderation side of things also comes into focus. For you, it's spirituality. For me, it's just consciousness, self-consciousness, because I'm not particularly spiritual, but I think I'm starting to learn about what it is to be me a lot more. And I love that. And I want to keep doing that.
So you said you're starting to become a little bit more understanding of yourself as you've grown older and what you want. And that is a form of the third way of well-being, which is take notice.
Yeah.
It's being able to step back and look at through things in a different lens, I guess.
Yeah.
Similar to when I talked about with Get Active, I asked you, how do you do that on a tough week? Because it's also good when we're all flying high on our mental well-being. It just seems like such an easy thing to manage. But when you're getting caught up, let's say you're, I hate the phrase back-to-back meetings. It's one of I just dislike it. It sounds so corporate and so unnatural. But anyway, let's say you're in back-to-back meetings.
Yeah.
All day. How do you take notice on a day like that?
It's important to, firstly, even if you're in back-to-back, I think it's important to plan in time away from that. So give yourself, don't feel guilty for going for 20 minutes on a walk around the block to go and see nature, just be out and walk and see the world. Or even if you have to stay inside, so have a coffee, but have a wander around and just see what people are doing. I love people watching. Taking notice for me is, there's a couple of things in life. So because it's more traveling sales, we get to get out and about a bit more. So I might be in back-to-backs, but they might be in London. So actually going into the capital, having some food, sitting on a bench and just watching people walk around and people's lives. And it gives you some perspective on everything. And often we just look at the floor and wander to the next meeting and to the next. But what I tend to do is look up and kind of see the beauty in the world and try and try and just be more present. So for me, our office is based on a trading estate in Wellingborough in Northamptonshire, which is as attractive as it sounds, right? So a lot of people won't see the beauty in that. But if you walk at this time of year, the trees are losing all their leaves and it's orange and it's an amazing pop of color and you can wander around. And it's also just silent. You just hear the wind because it's so quiet. There's no main roads. So I tend to do that. That's my way of relaxing. And it's the same at home. It'll be a walk. It'll be a 10-minute walk where the phones get left on the desk. You wander around, you come back. And it's incredible the amount that you're able to achieve just after taking that short break. I say that. It's all absolute rubbish when I'm in my own head because I'll be thinking, right, what's next? What's the process next? What do I have to do next week? I have to message X on WhatsApp and I have to do this on Teams. So I've not quite solved it, to be honest.
I like what you say about changing the perspective of where you are because I'll give you a good example. I hate London, as you know.
Yeah.
Like the Max and Paddy cap. I won't read what it actually says on that cap. But if any of our listeners have seen Max and Paddy's Road to Nowhere, episode 4, I believe it is. He's wearing a cap. Go and seek it out because I'm not going to say what it says. But actually, our Christmas party 2 years ago was in London and we went on a walking tour.
Mm.
And I enjoyed London for the first time.
Yeah.
Genuinely, like actually enjoyed my time there, wanted to be there. But it was looking at it through a different lens. It was taking notice of what is nice in London.
Mm.
You know, I'd only ever gone on the Underground and coming from Oxfordshire, never understood why people don't go, all right, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
unless they're looking to nick your iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. They're only friends if they want something. So I saw a different perspective. I was there with colleagues. It was a change to be there because I don't get there very often anymore.
Mm.
And actually, I think that's the solution.
But it's also stupid things like a train ride. A train ride with some noise cancelling headphones can be amazing. You put your you put really calming music on and you just watch the world go by outside the train window for an hour and a half. But no one can contact you because the signal's so bad in the UK. They just put yourself on public transport and then you can't be contacted for an hour and a half.
But the key is being able to enjoy it in those moments, like when you're on a train.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could be at the top of a mountain in Wales. It's very easy to be taken notice then. You're literally going on holiday to take notice.
Yeah.
Easy to be Mr. Spiritual in those conditions. Mm. But it's like, what am I like on, you know, driving into work when that person pulls out in front of me, you know, what's my well-being like then? You know, am I going to get angry? Am I full of resentment to that person?
Yeah.
Or so maybe my takeaway from what you said, James, is can I now enjoy the M25?
Yeah. That should be the clip up line on LinkedIn. Can I now enjoy it? No, the answer is always no. The point I think I'm trying to get at with take notice is you have to, as roles get more pressurized, you can just completely drown in it. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that you are putting circuit breaks in at all times to make sure that you force yourself out. You force yourself to the gym if you're going to be active again. You force yourself to do X or Y in your diary if it has to be that prescriptive. But if you're a person that generally doesn't mind taking breaks and getting out, in my brain, I can't take a break without giving myself like a tick box and saying, right, now you've got 10 minutes, go and enjoy it. It's kind of sad, but it's how you plan it.
And do you know what? Like, yeah, you're a planner, like you've described today. And my experience when I came out of a psych ward was that I was taught to plan activities throughout the day. Mm. So, like, it was quite common to do weekend planning.
Yeah.
In the outpatient departments, you'd go there all day, and then on the Friday afternoon, they'd ask you to plan your weekend.
Yeah.
So that you had a routine. And sometimes the tasks I would set myself would be to have a shower, go for a walk. And it might be only three things in a day. I'd be like, have a shower, go for a walk, eat some food.
Yeah.
But slowly you build up a positive mental well-being from action. And that's what the five ways to well-being are. They're all actions that we take.
And I think that, I mean, to nowhere near that level, but when I first had my first kind of real big mental health issue, it was sort of a breakdown and medication and you know, going into pretty consistent counselling. It was the same thing. Because in my life and in our lives generally, we've always had the metric of you need to be a sales director. So that's everything. So sales director is everything. And actually just showering and getting up and waking up and knowing it's okay to not have all of that, it was kind of freeing. And I think I was 22, 23 when I had my first real bout in adult life. And having someone tell you that it's okay to today just to shower or just to, you know, maybe just walk to the shop. But if that's too much, that's okay. Maybe you don't walk all the way to the shop. Maybe you just walk to the end of the road and you come back.
Mm.
And it's insane how quickly you can go from that to, you know, the positions that we're in. I've seen it specifically with you. You know, we've seen every single line across the spectrum of where we've been and our markers for it. And I think that's the most important thing, just because we are where we are today doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be there in a month, 2 months, 3 months.
Mm-hmm. In terms of learn, I know you didn't learn much in physics or chemistry in GCSE.
No, because I copied you.
But yeah. So not much self-sufficient learning in those classes. but you know, one thing I know about you is you love learning new skills.
Yeah.
You do pick up new ideas and you like to try new things. For example, like when you're into rock climbing for a little bit and so forth. How does that help your mental well-being when you pick up a new skill? Or in fact, it could be reading a book. What does learning do for you, for your brain?
When like you mentioned back in GCSEs, I thought in my immature brain, I thought I just need to get this done and move through. And I think it was kind of a missed opportunity, to be honest, because my brain now, as it's developed, I love learning. More specifically about my industry. So we're in the perfumery industry, and it's hundreds of thousands, millions of different opportunities and fragrances we could create or brands that we could work with. And that's what I love learning. I love learning on content. I love learning my job. I love learning the ins and outs of my job and the different roles. There are hundreds of roles within my industry, and I've only just scratched the surface with regards to what everybody does. So learning every single day is really, really important for me. When I was younger, I assumed a lot about the world, and I assumed that I was right about a lot of those things. But learning kind of makes me a little bit more humble, because there's so much in the world that we don't know. So every single day that I get to learn, specifically with regards to my industry, is amazing, and I love it. Outside of work, I just think it's really important, because otherwise I just focus on work all day. I'll keep doing emails, I'll keep doing everything. Learning takes you away, and it can be something completely different. You were mentioning rock climbing. Rock climbing was really cool for me. The cycling that I took up earlier on this year as well, and I became a full Lycra boy. It was really embarrassing for my family. And I loved it, because there's no limit in all of these topics. When you're learning, or you've done it before, when you're looking at like philosophy and things like that, realistically, there's no limit. The only limit is your brain. There's endless books. There's endless, infinite amount of information that you can pick up. And that's what's quite nice. There's no definitive end to learning. Mm. And I think we all look for a definitive end in work, but with learning, there is no. I'm never going to be the best rock climber. I'm never going to be the best cyclist. Equally, I'm probably never going to be the best person in my industry or the best sales director in my industry. And that's a lovely thing to have, because it doesn't limit your brain. And then you don't get depressed when you don't hit that limit, and you don't get low. You don't get low when you're not learning as quick as everybody else, or you're not the fastest person to read a book. That's what I love about it. The undefined ending to learning.
I like that. Because you and I have both always had that, like you described, that pursuit for the top, even though we don't even know what the top is.
Yeah.
I think you also described, might be wrong, I think it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect.
I know it well, clearly. So.
And it's essentially the idea that the most confident person in a room is actually the least intelligent.
Mm.
Because they think they know everything. So they know, because they know so little, and they happen to know enough about what they know, they therefore see themselves as having almost like 100% attainment of knowledge.
Yeah.
Whereas actually the smartest person in the room could be the person that doubts themselves the most, because they know what they don't know.
Mm.
But actually, isn't it so satisfying with learning that there's just endless possibilities to acquire knowledge, whether that's of theories or even of oneself.
And it's all, again, it goes back to balance, because it's giving yourself time to learn. And I don't do it enough. I've tried to learn French for the last 9 months, and I think all I know is, I'm not even going to do it on the podcast. I can't record it. Je m'appelle. No, I'm not going to do it. But I don't give myself enough time. And I think sometimes step four, to be honest, learning does take a backseat. I don't know whether it's the same for you. Obviously, it could be completely different for you. But for me, that is the step that takes the backseat, because it also takes a little bit more effort and time, and it requires other people around you to support you in that as well. Whereas I feel the other four steps are probably easier to do every single day. Learning is easy to do every day, but, you know, gym and family and blah, 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 blah. And in terms of my priorities, I put the other four above learning, which I shouldn't do, really.
No. And I would say the one I fall short of the most, actually take notice. I just get such tunnel vision. It's through prayer and meditation that I really get a chance to take notice in my life. Mm. You know, with learning... You know, there's an opportunity to do the masters here, James. Be rude of me not to mention it on the podcast.
You can't sell now. You're not allowed to sell on the podcast.
I know, but, you know, forgive me. but, you know, we've already had that conversation. But, you know, yeah, learning is just enjoyable. Takes me out of the... it brings me into the present.
Yeah.
And I think it's also lovely to find out how little you know about a topic.
Yeah.
I find it really refreshing.
I love being around experts in anything. Mm. I like sitting in a room and just letting them offload their knowledge. I sit with, in our industry, it's perfumers more than anything, and or individuals that have been in the industry for 40 years and they're telling me about fragrances that they were smelling back in the 70s, 80s, mm. and why they did it. And the interesting thing is the inspiration behind a lot of the reasons, a lot of the reasons for everybody getting into any industry, they're usually the same from the 50s to now. They haven't really changed in terms of people's inspiration with the content. The difference is just the historical context. You know, they were faxing formulations to each other, mm. or everything was going by post. When I was in my first sales job, the sales director at the time was like, oh yeah, we had a fax machine. Every time it turned on, the managing director would walk over to the fax machine, pick it up, look at it, and then walk over to the salesman and go, oh, that's a nice order, isn't it? That's a nice order. And then they go, well, I don't know. What is it? And I was, oh, you should know your orders. And then they put it down on the table. But it's things like that that we will never experience.
Is that still the same managing director as today?
Are we thinking of? Yeah. We're thinking of the same person.
I think he would love a fax machine to still exist, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would. Yeah, no, I think he would, because he'd love it in his office so that he could see that and kind of do the same thing.
Might get him one for Christmas. I think he'd like it.
It'd be a relic. You'd have to find it somewhere.
We're on to a finale, which is to give. Mm. And that is altruism.
Yeah.
Giving your time and... on cue, as I've said with every guest so far, thank you for giving your time
today. Right.
You've driven a couple hours and another couple hours to go to your destination.
Yeah.
So that's appreciated. And you know what? Like, people will get something out of your podcast. That's why I've picked people I'm very close to, but also people with a different story. Because I'm already thinking, I know there's a certain group of people. And in fact, everyone will get something from what you've said today. So I appreciate it.
No, thank you.
How important is giving to you?
It's crucial. Giving is crucial for me because I also find it really difficult. I find it difficult to receive, and I find it difficult to give anything when it comes to a professional context, because it's kind of strange in our culture. Everybody just ticks along, and if you agree to a meeting with someone or you agree to talk to someone, it's a strange thing. It's like, oh, thank you. I didn't realize, you know, we'll have a half an hour on that. Or I don't know why it's so weird. It's so strange. But giving is crucial to me because I feel it develops. It's the same everywhere. It develops a culture where you can trust individuals as well. Mm. For me, you're right. Did you want some water?
I'm all good, yeah.
You sure?
Yeah. Right. Coffee McCough.
Coffee McCough. No, yeah. I need to cough. It's infectious.
Could literally be.
COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, most of the giving isn't like a financial giving. It's more time and energy, and specifically with junior members of staff or individuals coming in, we work with a hell of a lot of interns, and I love it. I love spending time with them to talk about their reasons for wanting to join the industry. And I don't think anything's wasted, really. I think a lot of individuals sometimes see this giving or time or an hour with someone or a coffee with someone if they're down or they're low as a waste because we're not working. We're not on emails. We're not, you know, doing the day-to-day job. But actually, realistically, it does pay back. I feel personally that relationship pays back later in time. We had a lot of change in our sales team recently, and I make sure that I take people out, I have a conversation with them, I make sure they're away from the work. Just giving them the time and giving them the space as well to share with you is really, really important. Yeah, I'm not sure.
For me, the importance of giving, or it's founded in spiritual practice, and it is that to give is to get out of oneself.
Hmm.
So the four of the, let's say one of the four leading negative influences in my life are resentment towards other people, my own selfishness, dishonesty, and fear that's driven, right? And I find that when I am focused on another individual and I care about them. So it could, any act of giving is to care about someone else, whether it's to give them money, time, or energy, or whatever. Yeah. Where it helps my mental well-being is I completely forget about myself for that period of time. I have actually thoroughly enjoyed the last 45 minutes and completely forgotten about anything else.
It's like a meditation almost.
Yeah, it has been, yeah. Yeah, I was probably, or almost certainly, a bit self-absorbed driving in today. Because I drift into that mindset quite a lot. What am I going to get out of today? This is why I thoroughly enjoy doing this, because the ultimate purpose is to help the guest. There's also helping myself, but helping the company. It's good for Consalia. But ultimately, it's good for the people who listen. There might be someone out there who listens and goes, I needed to hear that today, and it brightens up their day.
It's hard when you're low, and when I've been specifically low, it's hard not to be selfish. It's hard not to be a selfish individual in that time, because you can only feel what you feel, and those emotions, and I've been there, it's horrific at times when you can't see anything except the cloud of grey that's all around, right? So giving in that time is almost impossible. And also the people around you see that. I don't think people expect you to give when you're in a position of hurt or when you're in a position of, mental unwellness. That's why I think it's really important to, when you are riding high or you're in a really good mental state, equally, it's hard to think about anybody else then, because you're so self-obsessed. You're concentrating on why you're succeeding and the great things that you're doing. Again, I think it's like any of the other steps. You need to make a conscious effort to be giving, remembering people's birthdays, making sure that you're there for people and that you're available. And it's really silly, but we've all had someone that's forgotten our birthdays. I forgot yours this year, so I didn't even message your one this year.
I was about to say it.
But that's the thing. So it's and again, it's because we're self-obsessed and we're there. We're in that world constantly, and we sometimes can't look out of it. So again, all of these steps aren't easy. If they were, they wouldn't be written down and people wouldn't be theorizing over them, right? If they were just perceived human behavior. So I think, again, it's another point that needs work, but it's hugely beneficial. I'm like you. It's nice to give.
I forgive you for the birthday, because I blame Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, because you got rid of Facebook, so I can't see your birthday.
Well, yeah, I blame him because his enormous success, our generation entirely relies on Facebook to tell you when it's your mate's birthday.
So
I'm going to blame him.
I'd blame me. No, let's take
responsibility.
Let's take responsibility.
All right, you can take me out for lunch next year.
Thanks.
Well, I look forward to that.
Thanks very much.
And I'm going to say
it again, or should I check Facebook?
You could write in your diary. Go old fashioned.
Oh, cheers. I'll throw that away. Giving is super important. And also, we have fairly similar upbringings, and apart from sort of Christmas and birthdays and stuff, that whole giving to just give, or being there to just be, is kind of slightly strange. I think it is generally the middle class that do these huge family things, and anything is celebrated and everything is a celebration in it, because it's not aspirational. It's not, you're just trying to get up the ladder. So everything is a success. You go to university, it's a success. You do this, it's a success. Whereas when somebody doesn't expect that from you, sometimes it's not seen as a success, or it's just, oh, well, they're way above their station, so they're lucky, or they're doing well, or they're doing whatever. So, yeah.
Which gives rise to envy.
I think so. And from our upbringings, I think it's difficult to be in a position where you want to go out and give all the time. And I also think, again, inherently, I'm not a person that gives very well. And I live around people that do give very well, and it kind of puts me at an odds. Inherently, I'm quite a good person at connecting, but the giving is still lacking, and I think you need to check that.
You can buy me lunch today, mate.
Yeah, cheers.
Yes, there you go. That will help your mental well-being. So, like I say in sales, it's, let the buyer do the conversation and then offer them a solution. So there we go.
Yours is gammon, egg and chips.
It will be gammon, egg and chips. Yeah. It's never anything different. But look, I really appreciate you making the effort to come today, James. I hope this makes a difference. It's already April when this gets published.
I know.
So I'll be at the time of year where I'm excited about the cricket season.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to score runs.
Yeah.
And I'll be about 2 months away from deciding that I'm going to take golf up.
Yeah, and I might be looking for another job, so we might as well just put that on LinkedIn.
Just advertise yourself.
No, I'll be laughing at you changing clubs or suggesting you're going to change clubs for cricket, and then avidly watching you whilst I down pints at the side, sunbathing probably.
Well, good stuff. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And again, once again, thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for having me.